and the certain,
I think a little bit more than a week ago. So this is still a work in progress. So please interrupt me. So I first want to apologize for not. I didn't actually have much time to prepare for this. So I'm just. I'll try to explain what I'm doing, and hope you can interrupt me anytime you find something confusing, or maybe you can even find some loopholes in our argument. So. So basically, what they are doing is that they use some U1 symmetry to restrict the possible ways of symmetry fractionalization in a Z2 spin liquid. So what we have figured out is that if we use another Z2 symmetry, so you can imagine that the U1 symmetry they are using is part of some larger SO3 spin rotation symmetry. So if we use another Z2 symmetry as a part of SO3 spin rotation symmetry, we can further restrict the possible symmetry fractionalizations and basically rule out all the exotic ones, just left with the ones we have seen in like Schwinger boson, Schwinger fermion parton constructions. That's the only thing that's possible. So I'd like to begin with some very quick introduction of what is symmetry fractionalization in a symmetry enriched topological order. So what we are talking about is basically a classification of symmetry enriched topological order, which means you have some intrinsic topological order. Plus some global symmetry. So intrinsic topological order means we are considering a gapped system with some long range entanglement. So there's no way to adiabatically connect this state to a trivial state without closing the gap. So this kind of intrinsic topological order does not need any protection of global symmetries. So example of this could include fractional quantum Hall state, like new equals to 1/3 fractional Laughlin state, or the state with toric code topological order, or the Z2 topological order, or maybe Kairos spin liquid. This is like a bosonic fractional quantum Hall state with new equals to 1/2. So on top of that, so these states, the non-trivial nature of these states doesn't need the projection of any global symmetries, but these states on its own can also have some global symmetries. So together, you get some enriched structure. So for example, if you have both fractional quantum Hall effect and some U1 global symmetry, you can get a SET state. So usually what we say in fractional quantum Hall state, the anion carries a charge 1/3. That's actually an SET state that's protected by both the intrinsic topological order and the U1 global symmetry. So you can only talk about the U1 charge when you have a U1 global symmetry. So this is actually an example of symmetry fractionalization. So it's because in this fractional quantum Hall state, we have anion excitations, and they are fractional particles. They have fractional statistics. So the anion actually so any physical state has to have three anions. So in some technical words, the three anions fuse into an identity. So any physical state, of course, must carry an integer charge. But since any physical state always have a multiple of three anions, so each anion can carry a 1/3 charge, that's still consistent with the constraint that any physical state would contain an integer charge. So this kind of thing is called symmetry fractionalization. Sure. I think there's other ways to detect it, like using Hall viscosity, some response to maybe curvature of the space. So even without the global symmetry, the state is still stable, and you can probably, so it will be harder to probe. Like, but like the annual statistics is also there, so it's not required by the U1 global symmetry. So you just need to figure out other ways to measure the topological order. So this symmetry functionalization the simplest non-trivial kind of SDT order. So for SDT order, so if you put intrinsic topological order and symmetry together, there are three type of things that can happen. So the most one is almost trivial. So you can just stack a intrinsic topological order plus some symmetry protected topological order, some SPT state. So this is by definition also an SDT state, but it's just a simple stacking of two already known states. The second one is symmetry fractionalization. So basically, anyone can carry a fractional quantum number, or more mathematically term, in mathematical terminology, is a projective representation of a symmetry group. And the third, more complicated possibility is that you can have some symmetries that maps one type of anion to another type of anion. So, for example, in toric code, you have E particles and M particles. They look just like each other. So their statistics are all the same. So you can have a Z2 symmetry that probably exchanges E and M. So that's a more complicated situation that we are not considering. So now I'm only considering SET states that are characterized by symmetry fractionalizations. So we want to, so with this limitation, we want to classify SET orders by, so given a intrinsic topological order, we want to classify all the possible SET states we can get on top of this topological order with the limitation that the symmetry action only the symmetry action does not change any on type, still maps one anion to the same type of anion, but maybe with a fractional quantum number. So actually, the classification of this symmetry enriched topological order maybe usually goes in two steps. So you can first classify all the projective representation. Of the symmetry group of G. So this is easy. This is just mathematically what kind of projective representation of the symmetry group is consistent with the anion fusion rules. So it's like, for example, for this fractional quantum Hall state, we know the charge can only be a like one-third of or two-thirds of an integer value because three anions needs to fuse to identity. So we need to find out all the projective representations that's consistent with anion fusion rules. But it turns out not all the projective representations that are consistent with the anion fusion rules can be realized in two dimensions. So some of them are anomalous, and in the sense that they can only be realized on a surface of a three-dimensional SPT state. So in the context of Z2 spin liquids, I think one of the famous examples is this ETMT state, first discovered by Chong Wang and Santo. So this is the state where both the E and the M particles carries T squared equals to minus one. So this particular combination can only appear on the surface of a three-dimensional topological superconductor. So it can't be realized in two-dimensional systems. So what Michael Hermley and Xiechen did in this paper is that they discovered a systematic way of producing a lot of anomalous symmetry fractionalizations, or in some other sense, it presents a systematic way of ruling out many anomalous symmetry fractionalizations, telling you which one is not anomalous. So in this talk, I'm going to find some restrictions on the possible symmetry fractionalizations in the sense that whatever combinations, whatever the projective representation that doesn't satisfy the constraint we discover is anomalous. So they are still mathematically correct, but it's just anomalous, so it can't be realized in real 2D system. But it's still mathematically consistent 2D SCT order. So let me see where I go. Okay, so in order to discuss this anomaly test, I'm going to first relate some of the symmetry fractionalizations to some 1D SPT variables. So let me see. Maybe let me give you some example of the first step. So give you some example of the projective representation of the symmetry group first, so that we're not talking about some abstract mathematical notations. So for example, I would like to talk about Z2 spin liquids plus spin rotation symmetry. SO3 spin rotation symmetry plus the lattice symmetry of the Kagome lattice. So let's think about a Z2 spin liquid on a Kagome lattice. So also plus time resource symmetry. So let's first talk about this crystal symmetry group. So the lattice symmetry group of the Kagome lattice can be generated by four generators. So we have two translations, T1 and T2, and we can choose two other generators like this reflection sigma and this reflection mu. So everything can be expressed using these four symmetry generators. So here, in a Z2 spin liquid, we know the anions satisfy a Z2 fusion rule. So there are two bosonic anions, E and M, and their bond states, E fuse M into epsilon. So this is their bond state is a fermion. So usually people call them bosonic spin-on, Vison, and the fermionic spin-on. So we think about the crystal symmetry fractionalization. That's the projective representation the anion can take of this crystal symmetry group times this time reversal symmetry. So because of the this Z2 fusion rule, like E cross E fuses E and M fuses M and epsilon fuses with epsilon is always identity. So that means all the types of anions can only appear in pairs. So for each type of anion, they can take a projective representation of this lattice symmetry group times time reversal symmetry. But this symmetry fractionalization can only have Z2 coefficients. Like if you have, for example, this reflection symmetry. So in this symmetry group, reflection symmetry gives you plus one, but when the reflection symmetry acts on one anion, it can give you a minus one. That's okay because you always have two anions. So if you have two anions, this minus one just squares into plus one. But you can't have any other fractional faces. So it's like this one acting on anion can be either plus one or minus one. So this is basically a projective representation with a Z2 coefficient. So mathematically, if you calculate this, so this is just notation for projective representation with the Z2 coefficients. So basically, what you get is a bunch of Z2 variables labeling different symmetry fractionalizations.
What is the second Z2 there?
Oh, this is the coefficient. Like,
is that the topological order of Z2?
It's the fusion rule, not the Z2 topological order. Like for chiral semion, it's also Z2. And also, this is the projective representation for one anion only. So it's not the ICT order for the whole topological order. So it's like you have one projective representation for E particle and another projective representation for the M particle. So by putting them together can give you some anomalous combinations. But if you don't consider anomalies, all the combinations are allowed. So for the two topological orders, like the square of this. So maybe let me just write down what are the seven possible D2 variables. So the first one is you have two translations. They could commute or anti-commute. And second one, and then you have a mirror symmetry. Mirror square can be either plus one or minus one. Sigma square can be plus one or minus one. And you have time reversal square can be either plus one or minus one. So if you multiply the two mirrors together, you get a 60-degree rotation. That's a six-fold rotation. So I'm going to use the notation that so this mu times sigma to the power of third is a 180-degree rotation. That's like inversion symmetry, two-dimensional inversion symmetry. So this inversion square in the original symmetry group is plus one, so it can be fractionalized into either plus one or minus one. But somehow this is related to this one times the commutation relation between sigma and mu, but it's easier if I discuss it in this way. And there's also sigma times time reversal total square and mu times time reversal total square. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, yeah. So this projective representation of the crystal and time reversal symmetry group carried by both E and M anions are characterized by seven Z2 variables. So in principle, after the first step, you could have some arbitrary combination of like a set of seven variables for the E particles and a set of Z2 variables for the M particles. And you can just take any combination you want. They are all valid, self-consistent two-dimensional SCT orders. But it turns out most of them are anomalous. So most of the combinations can't be realized in 2D. So I'm going to first talk about how to relate these symmetry fractionalizations to some measurable 1D SPT invariants. So this is a work done by Michael Zalato and Yuanming Lu and Ashvin earlier this year. So the idea is that we want to put the system on a thin cylinder, or infinitely long thin cylinder, or a torus. So it's like you imagine that you have a cylinder. So either you can imagine the cylinder is infinitely long, or you can glue this end to this end, so it becomes a torus. So we know for a Z2 topological order, if we put it on a torus, the ground state is fourfold degenerate. So actually, for any abelian topological order, the ground state is n-fold degenerate if there are n type of anions in the topological order, and each ground state corresponds to one type of anion flux going through this direction. So you can imagine, you can understand it as if you cut the torus into a finite cylinder with two edges. For the ground state with a certain anion flux, it's like you have two anions trapped at both ends of the cylinder. So actually, yeah, but here the fusion rule is always Z2, so it's the same kind of anion on both ends. So I can, so if I write the corresponding So I can label these ground states using the anion type. So I have four ground states. A is either 1 or E or M or epsilon. It means that if I take this A ground state and I cut the torus, I get two anions trapped at the two ends. So it turns out, if you think about a quasi one-dimensional limit, then these four different ground states become four different states. So they are no longer degenerate, and some of them are high energy states. But they are still eigenstates of the Hamiltonian if we put it on a cylinder. And and if there's a symmetry fractionalization for one anion, that means this anion has a non-trivial SPT property protected by the corresponding symmetry. The argument depends on what kind of symmetry we are talking about. So basically, we need to talk about unitary and anti-unitary symmetries in separately. So in this case, I'm talking about some Z2 global symmetries. Like, if you look at this table, so apart from the first symmetry fractionalization label, all the others has been arranged into some Z2 form. We did that on purpose. So there are always some symmetry action square equals to, so the symmetry square equals to 1 in the original symmetry group, and after fractionalization, it could be either plus 1 or minus 1. So here, we are talking about some symmetry fractionalization of x square equals to either plus 1 or minus 1. So the first case is if x is anti-unitary.
Any symmetry,
any Z2 symmetry.
Yeah, okay.
So if A is so if this symmetry is anti-unitary, then the idea is that you try to cut the system into two pieces, and you can decompose the ground state using the Schmidt eigenstate decomposition. And so I can formally write it this way. So this alpha labels different eigenstates in the reduced density matrix. And so basically, I can do a Schmidt decomposition and decompose the states into the left part and the right part. So originally, the problem was that the ground state wave function always has two anions in it. So it's difficult to separate. So this is a way to separate the action of x on each individual anion. So because you can imagine that now this left part and right part each contain one anion. So you can now ask how x acts on the left eigenstates, like what's the action of x square acting on the left eigenstates. So both of the left and right Schmidt eigenstates carry a projective representation of this symmetry x. But this is a projective representation with a U1 coefficient, because when you do the Schmidt decomposition, there's a U1 gate degree of freedom there. So you can arbitrarily choose the face of the left part and right part. So you can multiply the left part by e to the I theta and the right part by e to the minus I theta. So there's a phase ambiguity in the Schmidt decomposition. So in the sense that this x on the left and right states with a projective representation with U1 coefficient. But if x is anti-unitary, then it doesn't matter, because if x acts on it with some U1 phase redundancy, the next time x acts on it, the U1 phase redundancy will be canceled out. So this action of x squared on the left eigenstate is still well defined. And so in some sense, you can define the symmetry fractionalization of x acting on this alpha by specifying whether x squared acts on the Schmidt eigenstates with plus 1 or minus 1. And it turns out this also This also gives you a way to measure the SPT invariant, because here X is an anti-unitary anti-unitary Z2 symmetry. So the one-dimensional SPT SPT states are also also classified by this H up 2 XU1. So if X is anti-unitary transformation, this 1D SPT classification gives you Z2. And the classification of symmetry fractionalization is projective representation with a Z2 coefficient, but the projective representation with both U1 and the Z2 coefficient is always Z2. So it doesn't matter like if you use the U1 coefficient or Z2 coefficient. So if X is an anti-unitary transformation, you can set it up in the way that it acts on the left part and it maps the left part to the left part and right part to the right part, right part to the right part. And you can measure the symmetry fractionalization by measuring the 1D SPT invariant protected by the symmetry X. So maybe let me write this down somewhere. Yes, sure, of course. So otherwise, so technically you can only define the action of X if that card respects the symmetry. So for example, so if we have, so I think in this list, this one and this one, these are all anti-unitary transformations. So transversal symmetry is easy to eliminate. It doesn't matter how you cut it; it's always transversal invariant because they're on site. So for this one, you want the symmetry. So basically, you want to implement a reflection with respect to axis that's along the longitudinal direction of the cylinder, and the cut is perpendicular to the reflection axis. So after the cut, the left part is still invariant under the mirror symmetry. So this can actually be implemented in real DMRG calculations. Like if you have a wave function from real DMRG wave function, you can do the cut and extract this symmetry fractionalization quantum number from measuring the SPT invariant. Okay. So,
the question too about,
yeah.
You said that it's cutting the way to define the action on the symbol, but mm-hmm. When you cut it, couldn't there be now a pair of anyone's like, you know, one the I'll say one of the RC right?
So in some sense, let me see. So in some sense, if the system is set up in some way, so you could have some pair of anions like localized, like if you have some vacuum fluctuation, that means you have some anions that are created within the left part. So that one is okay because the action will be canceled out. Like each one will give you another minus one, but they are canceled out. So the fact that you have one anion like localized on the somewhere in the so you have an imbalance of anion charge because of the anion flux running through the cylinder. So in that sense. I guess there's some.
You mean here, right?
Maybe it doesn't matter.
Right. I guess there is some probably some conservation laws that yeah, because. Yeah, so there are some conservation laws, right? If you cut it this way, so for a given ground state, the number of like A and A pairs you cut is conserved because of the annual flux. So yeah, I don't have a very good argument of this, but. Sorry. So it's like so if we think about the perhaps or some RVB like pair wave functions. So the trivial ground state will correspond to the state that all the pairs are like paired to each other in this part. So if you create a pair across this, there must also be another pair across this. So the total cut is a constant number. Or another way of saying that is, you can probably a better way of saying that is like you can define the topological setter by specifying the result of Wilson loops in the transverse direction. So the result of Wilson loop will tell you like how many NM parts you'll cut after you separate it into two parts. So the parity of this NM pairs can't just fluctuate. If you create two pairs, that will change the topological sector.
What's the
Right, but so theoretically we need to consider a cylinder that's wide enough. So the annual so the only thing that will change the topological sector is that if you create two anions and let them move around the whole torus in the transverse direction and annihilate themselves, so this will change the topological sector. So is that right? Sorry, the one will change the topological sector is if you allow the anion, if you create a pair and allow the anion to go across in the longitudinal direction and annihilate themselves. So we need the cylinder to be long enough such that these amplitudes are infinitely suppressed, exponentially suppressed. Right. I mean, they are not conserved because you could have anions, virtually create two anions and move them along the other direction and fuse back. That will change the Wilson loop. But yes. So I guess we are talking about probably ground state where the you can still write down the four ground states as eigenstates of the Wilson loop. So there are some like I think he's talking about this Wilson loop, yeah, which labels different topological sectors. I think in general, like so there is an argument that if the ground state is on a finite cylinder, it's always sublated as the eigenvalue of the Wilson loop. But, I think at least that's what's seen in numerics. In, Yeah, maybe we can discuss that later. Sorry, I don't have a very good answer for that. Yeah. So anyway, so in their paper, they're saying that if X is anti-unitary, then you should set up the symmetry in a way that the X maps the left part to the left part and right part to the right part, and this X will protect the SBT invariant. So this symmetry fractionalization is then mapped to the SBT invariant. Well, actually, maybe a rough way of arguing this is that so if this mapping works in some ideal limit. For some ideal wave functions with very short range correlation functions. And then both the symmetry fractionalization and SBT invariants are quantized. So we don't expect it to change after you smoothly tune into a realistic model. Probably some that. So the next case is if X is anti-unitary, then X is like this, X maps the left part to the left part. But if X is unitary, so it's important that, so here, if X is unitary, we need to set it up in another way, because if X on the left part, and you want to ask the question, what's the value of X squared on L, of X, then it doesn't give you a well-defined answer because of the phase ambiguity from the Schmidt decomposition. So here, S squared can give you some arbitrary phase, so that could interpolate between plus one and minus one. So there's no definite distinction between X squared equals to plus one or minus one. Another way of saying that is if X is unitary, then this group cohomology is trivial, so there's no. This is trivial, so there's no non-trivial SBT protected by some on-site Z2 unitary symmetry in 1D SBT. But yes. So what I'm saying is that so if I consider the quasi 1D dimensional limit, so if this is a cylinder which is much longer in one direction, so I can view this as a one-dimensional, quasi-1D system, then this 2D SCT symmetry fractionalization invariant is mapped to a 1D SPT invariant. So later on, so we can use this 1D SPT invariant to do some argument. So one way of understanding this anomaly test is to map the system to some quasi-1-dimensional limit. Okay, so. Yeah. So in this way, it doesn't work if you set it up as if X still maps left to the right, to left. So for example, but we know in 1D SPT, if there's a unitary symmetry that maps the left part to the right part, it's like if I in 1D SPT, if you have a reflection symmetry. So if this reflection maps the left wave function to the right, and the maps the right wave function to the left, this reflection symmetry in 1D still protects the SBT. So for example, a Hodian chain can be either protected by on-site time reversal symmetry or a bound center reflection symmetry. So in some sense, if you look at the Schmidt decomposition, I'm now required that X maps this the left wave function to the right wave function, and the right wave function to the left wave function. So somehow this U1 phase arbitrariness is canceled out. Let me just say this way. So if X is a unitary transformation, I need to implement X as a reflection symmetry in the quasi one dimensional limit. So it maps left to the right and right to the left. So for example, this one, both of them are unitary transformations. So for the reflections, I need to implement that such that it's parallel to the cut. In order to convert this mirror reflection square into a 1D SVT, I need to implement the mirror reflection in a way that it maps the left part to the right part and the right part to the left part. And also, this 180 rotation works naturally in this way, because if you think about rotation and smash it to 1D limit, it works like a reflection. So it's an inversion within a unit cell, and then you just reverse the left and right direction. Yeah. So in this way, if I set up this this symmetry, this Z2 symmetry, crystal symmetry correctly, I can map this two-dimensional symmetry fractionalization quantum number to a 1D SPT quantum number. So now we can talk about this anomaly test. Okay, so in the Z2 split queen, So now I'm assuming that this E particle carries spin 1/2. It's a half integer representation of this spin SO3 spin rotation symmetry group. And the Weisson carries the integer spin representation of this SO3 spin rotational symmetry group. Because of this E particle carrying a spin 1/2, it's like I can take a SO2 subgroup of this SO3 spin rotation group generated by this spin rotation with respect to the Z axis. It's like you have a spin. It's like this U1 or SO2 spin rotation. So it's like a U1 symmetry. So it's like global U1 symmetry. So now I can gradually thread in a flux of this U1 global symmetry. So if I thread in a flux phi, it's like this is also a trick widely used in DMRG study. So if you thread in a flux pi, like for example, in a Heisenberg model, originally you had this SI plus SI minus plus SI minus plus SJ plus this kind of off diagonal spin exchange interaction along this direction. So now if I modify this interaction to e to the I phi, so this will be like changing the boundary condition along the transverse direction and gradually threading in a phi flux of this SO2 spin rotation symmetry. So in this sense, because this E particle carries the spin 1/2, if it goes around this transverse direction, it will pick up a phase phi. It will pick up a phase phi over 2. So in the limit that if you gradually vary phi from 0 to 2 pi, so at the end of the process, the E particle will see a pi flux. That means so you can map that to the corresponding value of this Wilson loop operator. So this means that there's a Weisson flux going through the cylinder. So if you gradually change this phi from 0 to 2 pi, you are going to adiabatically connect the trivial ground state to the m part, to the ground state corresponding with corresponding to a flux of m particle going through the cylinder. Okay, so now so the trick Michael Herbert and Xie Chen you discussed in their paper is that you can imagine that during this adiabatic threading process, if the symmetry X is preserved throughout this process, that it implies that during this adiabatic change, the 1D SPT invariant cannot jump from like trivial to non-trivial, because the trivial anion has no symmetry fractionalization, so all the 1D SPT invariants are trivial for the in this trivial ground state wave function. So if the symmetry is preserved throughout this process, that means this M state is also a trivial 1D SPT. So that implies this M particle also must have a trivial symmetry fractionalization. So basically, the other possibility is anomalous. In that sense.
Anomalous means that there's no sensible.
So it means that it can only be realized on a three-dimensional SPT state. So in some.
What is the signal here for normal?
Okay, so the anomaly is like if you imagine that this torus is not empty, it's stuffed by some 3D SPT in the middle, which. In which which is protected by U1 symmetry and some crystal symmetry, and the U1 monopole carries some fractional symmetry quantum number. That means when you thread in the flux, there's a monopole going into the bulk, which carries some non-trivial fractional. So when you have some 3D non-trivial 3D SPT stuff in the middle, and you thread in a flux that can change the 1D SPT characterization of the surface. But this can't happen when there's nothing in the middle. So in some sense, this argument implies that for any truly two-dimensional system, this M anion must have a trivial symmetry fractionalization. So the other possibility is anomalous, but it's not explicitly constructed in this way. So you can imagine that there's probably some way to figure out what's the 3D SPT ball you need to put in into the cylinder to make it consistent. So in this way, so in their paper they're basically, they were saying that so if I thread in a flux, because these symmetries are symmetries of the original Hesperian model, like, but when you change the flux, when you thread in a flux like this, the symmetry may not. So this modification of the Hamiltonian may break the symmetry. So if the modification of the Hamiltonian doesn't break the symmetry, then the symmetry is still preserved, and we can conclude that this mirror symmetry must have a trivial symmetry fractionalization. So it's actually quite easy to check. So you can just apply the symmetry and see if the symmetry operation maps phi to either plus phi or minus phi. So it turns out, because all these are Z2 symmetries, so that's the only possibility. So if this symmetry preserves the phi, that means the symmetry is preserved during this threading process. So we can conclude that x squared must be 1 for the anion, for m anion. So it turns out the time reversal symmetry, the two mirror symmetries all satisfy this condition. So this phi goes to phi. So this directly immediately implies that T square and mu square and the sigma square must be plus one for the anion. So for the other three variable invariants, this inversion and mu T and sigma T, they map phi to minus phi. Okay. So yeah, maybe one. So here it also depends on the orientation of the setup. So it looks like weird because both mu and T preserves the phi, but they act together that flips the phi. That's because when I'm talking about mu itself, it maps the left part to the right part. So it's like the phi, direction of phi is this, and the mirror just reverse just maps this one to that one, but the orientation of flux is the same on both ends. But when I'm considering mu times t, it's an anti-unitary transformation, so I need to implement the mirror in the perpendicular way. So I need the mirror axis to be this way. So it will reverse the direction of the flux on this edge. So that's why when mirror and time reversal multiply together, it actually reverses the flux. So it turns out in this case, we can just use a simple trick. We can consider instead this this symmetry coupled with some pi rotation with respect to the x-axis. So this one, because it anti-commutes with SZ, it also, so this spin rotation, this pi spin rotation itself also maps phi to minus phi. So if you multiply them together, this combined symmetry actually preserves this symmetry flux. So these three combined symmetries are also preserved throughout this threading process. So by the same argument, we can conclude that this x times e to the I pi x e to the I pi sx, this thing total square is plus one. Then the quick argument is that now because we assume this Weissmann carries if we believe that the Weissmann carries no spin, then this spin rotation has no action on the Weissmann. So we can basically drop this part and get the same conclusion that x squared equals to plus one. The more complicated argument is that if Weissmann carries an integer spin, then this thing square alone gives you plus one, and if there's a full SO3 spin rotation symmetry. Because this SO3 is single connected, there's no way to, if you calculate the projective representation of this Z2 times this spin SO2, there's no way to fractionalize the commutation relation between this one, this part and this part. So the commutation relation is always trivial, so we can just factor out this e to the I pi SS total square, and it's always plus one. So basically this means that three starred ones, I only need a spin SO2 spin rotation symmetry to show that for the Weissmann these three are plus one, but for the ones marked by this, sorry, and okay, it's another so this mark is about the whether it's unitary or anti-unitary. So for the first three, it only requires SO2 symmetry. A spin SO2 rotation symmetry to show that they must be plus one for Weissmann, acting on the Weissmann. And for the last three, we actually need the full SO3 spin rotation symmetry. Okay, so it appears that we only use a SO2 cross Z2 or O2 part of the spin rotation symmetry, but actually we need the full spin SO3 spin rotation symmetry, because some of the argument I'm presenting becomes very weird, complicated when we only have SO2 cross Z2, because So basically, we're saying there's no way to fractionalize the computation relation between x and this z2. That's because this SO3 is single connected. But when the symmetry group is reduced, it's possible that Bison carries some non-trivial symmetry fractionalization where the crystal symmetry anti-commutes with the spin flip. So things become really complicated. And also, even our assumption becomes not so clear, because if the spin rotation symmetry is SO3, there's only integer and half integer representations. But if it's O2, there are more complicated projective representations, the classification. So the projective representation of O2 itself is Z2 cross Z2. So even for the spin-ons, there are four possibilities. You can either you can independently have a half charge of this SO2 Z rotation, and also this x square e to the I pi SX total square can be independently plus one or minus one. So there are many, many possibilities that we probably don't want to get into. So it's probably safe that our conclusion holds for if there's a spin SO3 rotation, spin rotation symmetry. So so far we have I think any lattice will work, but so we have explicitly checked the Kagome and the triangular lattice is basically the same symmetry group. So we probably need to carefully check the square lattice. So on the square lattice, there's some computation relation between translation and the mirror symmetry that we haven't checked yet. But I think it probably also works, because any symmetry either flips the flux or preserves the flux. So if it flips the flux, we just add e to the I pi SX to it so that it still works. Yes?
So you're saying the TSG of Lyson is the same TSG as the Lyson in
Denmark. Yes. Or in any parton construction or in a Z2 eigengate theory. So the only possibility is this one is either plus one or minus one. But even that one is fixed when you have odd number of spin one half per unit cell. So and also we require the spin down to carry spin one half. So if spin down carry integer spin, then you can have everything is possible. Yeah, probably there, if we still assume the spin on carries spin one half, then the Bison would have, so this one would be plus one, and also the rest of the argument still holds, because the symmetry group is the same as the triangular lattice. Okay, I would like to briefly mention, so we can also apply this to a chiral spin liquid. So by chiral spin liquid, I actually mean the spin liquid with chiral semion topological order. So the, in literature, so sometimes people also call a Z2 spin liquid with the broken time reversal symmetry a chiral spin liquid. I'm not talking about that. So I'm talking about a chiral semion state. So there are only one anion, two anions. There is a trivial anion and semion. So the semion has ice. Or power two self-statistics, and it has this fusion rule that semion fuses semion equals to one. This state necessarily breaks time reversal symmetry because it's chiral, and so if we put it on the Kagome lattice, you don't get this. There's no time reversal symmetry, and also because there's a spin chirality order parameter basically. Si cross Sj dot Sk. this also breaks the mirror symmetries because this one is also odd under mirror symmetries. But this order parameter is odd under both time reversal and mirror. So if you actually if you multiply them together, that's still a symmetry. So the symmetry group is now generated by the mirror times time reversal, sigma times time reversal, and two translations. So if I look at this table, there's some question that I can't ask. So For example, I can't ask this question because mu is not a symmetry. This question is gone. This question is also gone. But I still have these three questions. So you can see that basically using the same algorithm, I can still thread in a. So if I assume the semion carries the spin 1/2, I can still thread in a 2-pi flux of this U1 symmetry. But now this will bring me from the trivial sector to the semion sector instead of the Weissmann sector, right? So that so for all these three symmetries, they all flip the flux. So I need to supplement them with this e to the I pi sx part. So I get the conclusion that x times e to the I pi sx total square is plus 1. But now the semion carries spin 1/2. So this part, e to the I pi sx total square, is actually minus 1 for the semion. So that means from this anomaly test argument, I get that both of these answers must be minus 1 for the chiral semion topological order. So it's different from Z2's liquid, where all the Weissmanns have is forced to have all a trivial symmetry fractionalization. So here, actually, the anomaly test tells me that the semion must have a non-trivial symmetry fractionalization for all the three labels. So Lukasz is working on checking that using DMRG. They can get the Guangxi wave function from DMRG studies and using the method described by Michael Zalito et al. So we can check these predictions numerically. And it also means that if we think about fully symmetric chiral semi liquids on the Kagome lattice, there's only one possible ICT state. So previously, this state is also constructed using like fermionic parton constructions, like Schwinger fermion constructions. You can write down some mean field wave function and do a Gauss-Bourdieu projection to get the same wave function. So it means that, so this argument implies that whatever you get from Schwinger fermion construction represents the same state as this DMRG ground state. So we can also explicitly check the.
Even the Schwinger boson, like four different ansatzes.
We can probably check. I think I've seen some work on. So yeah, probably. I'm not sure if you're talking about some work classifying Schwinger boson with Z2 topological order, but broken time reversal symmetry.
No, unbroken. Well, there's this Q1 equals Q2 and Q1 equals minus Q2 states.
Oh, I'm talking about chiral semi liquids, not Z2.
Chiral. Okay. There's only one chiral semi
liquid. Right. Because for chiral semi liquid, it's like it puts restriction on the semion itself. So for Z2 spin liquids, the test only puts restrictions on the Weissmanns, but spin-on is free to have any symmetric fractionalization. But here, there's only one type of anion, so it's like a bound state of semion, the spin-on and Weissmann, so it puts the restriction on itself. And also because semion carries spin 1/2, so actually all the symmetry fractionalization are crystal symmetries are required to have non-trivial fractionalization. So, and we can explicitly show that for the Schwinger fermion construction, the mean field wave function for this chiral spin liquid, the mean field fermionic spin-on wave function also has this unique symmetry fractionalization. So I guess that's it. So any questions? Right. Yes. Yes. So it's like the argument is like so if you just have a cylinder with nothing in the bulk, if you do this smooth, if you insert a flux smoothly, then the beginning and initial and final state must have the same SPT invariant, because doing some smooth variation, you can't suddenly change the SPT property of the ground of the state. So
the 1D SPT.
Yeah, it's the 1D SPT. So if you view the system as, so if the cylinder is long enough, you can view it as a quasi 1D system. Yeah. Or another way of saying that is this 1D SPT invariant is also mapped to how the symmetry acts on the Schmidt eigenstates. So there's also two distinct ways that the symmetry acts on the Schmidt eigenstates that can't be smoothly connected from one to the other. So that also works even in 2D geometry.
So in this argument, do you require
the symmetry or it's actually quite tricky. So there are some technical details I didn't talk about. So somehow, in order to formulate this this 1D SPT argument or to specify like, so I think for these three that doesn't require this. For the anti-unitary transformations, I don't need translation symmetry. But for the unitary transformations, especially for the mirror symmetries, there's a subtlety that so without translation symmetry, it's sometimes it's hard to define a clear cut because I need the mirror symmetry to map the left part to the right part. But usually the mirror axis has some invariant point on the axis, so it doesn't clearly cut the system into a left part and the right part. So somehow, in some cases, we can combine the mirror symmetry and the translation symmetry. So that like you separate the system in two parts. The mirror symmetry would map this part to itself, but if you apply a translation symmetry after that, it will move this part to that part. So it gives you a clear cut between the left and right. So I think for some of the mirror symmetries, maybe it's kind of tricky. Maybe we need the translation symmetry, but for the anti-unitary transformations and also for inversions, I don't think that's necessary. So, and also there's the assumption that the semion or the spinon, the E particle carries a spin 1/2. So that's guaranteed if you have translation symmetry and odd number of spin 1/2 for any cell. So if you break translation symmetry, maybe you end up with some state where spinon doesn't carry spin 1/2, then we can't make any conclusions. But if we independently assume the spinons carry spin 1/2, most of the arguments still apply. I think in some complicated way there, I remember I was told that there are such constructions, but I don't know the details. So somehow you need some Chern number in the, so you probably need some string of boson and put them in some bosonic quantum Hall state. So, yeah, I haven't checked that yet, but in principle, I think that's possible. But you're using fermions more direct because it's easier to put fermions in a band structure with a Chern number, and get a chiral state.
Thanks.